Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Word association with John MacArthur.
I use the complete idiot's guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior higher.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey, wanna be annoyed? Then you've come to the right place for a newly written classic hymn. Enjoy.
Oh, sacred neck, now wounded.
Stop the bus right there. This is Wretched Radio. That was Matt Maher. He happens to be a Roman Catholic who happens to be singing a new version of a classic hymn written in the Middle Ages and during the test of time because it's Orthodox, perhaps one of your favorite hymns. O Sacred Head, Now Wounded, is now O Sacred Neck, Now Wounded. Whilst you're enjoying this hymn, if you could do everybody on the planet a favor by trying to decipher who exactly is being sung about here anyway.
Sacred neck, now wounded.
I'm guessing George Floyd.
Pressed down by blows and knees.
Makes it a little more clear.
This Son of God surrounded.
Now, well, that's Jesus.
By silent enemies.
Well, actually, no, Jesus wasn't surrounded by silent enemies because he was being taunted. I'm getting a little confused.
Will no one stop and listen? Will no one rise and speak of violence and oppression which hanged you from that tree?
Okay, apparently we're singing about Jesus, but it's difficult to tell in this, well, at least approved by one Gospel Coalition writer, brand new song that is being peddled on the evangelical market to encourage us all to believe in social justice. There's just one problem with that phrase, as there is with this song, and that is the blurring of words. This is huge what is happening, as you see so much Marxism being introduced to your church. Words are being confused. Words are being redefined. You think it means one thing. They think it means another. And this is happening a lot. For instance, I hold in my never-before-nicotine-stained fingers an article in Christianity Today that tells us John Calvin believed that justice is a form of worship. This is an article that is telling us, basically, it seems to me, as best I can tell, because it's kind of hard to tell what they mean these days, that John Calvin said this, that justice is not a distraction from or tangential to the Christian faith, but is integral to it. And you and I, of course, would agree with that. Right?
Sure.
But the question is, what justice are you talking about? John Calvin, no doubt, was talking about biblical justice. He had no concept at the time of the social justice that we are seeing burning down buildings in the streets of America. He would have said that justice is God's justice, that he is righteous, that he demands justice, that if somebody does wrong, there is a payment for the crime, and that we are charged to do justly, that we are to act rightly, to not sin against one another. And so justice is God's justice, and justice can be how we treat one another, and justice can indeed be fair treatment in our society. Is that what is being meant by the word justice today? And the answer is absolutely not. That's the issue. Don't you want justice, they say? And you say, of course I do. Great. then join Black Lives Matter. Well, now, wait a second. Hold on. What do they think justice is? There is no question about it. One of the co-founders, she identifies herself as a trained Marxist. And that is what social justice means to them. And this particular article, as best I can understand it, because truly, it's a challenge to understand it when words, they're mere Trojan horses for different concepts. While this might surprise some people today, John Calvin believed that we must act justly in order to live piously. Yeah, right. Of course we should. That's biblical. That's what Calvin meant. That's not what is being meant today. Justice not only reveals personal piety, but also is a means of living piously. What's more, justice is the meat and potatoes of what it means to love others. Many modern evangelicals don't think along such lines. Well, no, actually, an evangelical does. But that doesn't mean that we believe in social justice. Please watch for this switcheroo. It is happening a lot. It is happening in churches. Maybe it happened in your church on Sunday. That we need to take a moment and think about what's happening in our culture and any injustices. And you go, absolutely. But what is meant by that phrase today? What it means is the entire system is kafritz. It was created by white men, European, heterosexual, Christian males, for the sake of keeping them in power to oppress other people groups. And therefore, if we are going to have a just society, that whole structure needs to go. If that smells like Marxism, it's because that is Marxism. And that is what is meant by justice in common parlance today. That is not biblical justice. An encouragement, if your church is experiencing the battle that is taking place for your pulpit, the direction of your church, and what the gospel is, I cannot encourage you enough to ask questions. When you say justice, please tell me what you mean by that. And we most likely will uncover it has a different meaning than you think it does. And when that happens, in order to defend the gospel of Jesus Christ, we've got to speak out against it. Is this our favorite subject? No, because it makes you look like a racist jerk. But this is not about racism. This, in this instance, is about the gospel of Jesus Christ and making sure that the word justice is not being loaded with all kinds of unbiblical ideologies, which, at its worst, undermines what biblical justice is. And that should grieve us. That should grieve us. It's fascinating. The NFL. I watched. We were in a restaurant after church on Sunday, and of course,
you were watching sports at home.
There was sports on TV, and you can't go anywhere, and there's no restaurant. And by the way, hi California, our restaurants are open in Georgia. There's a TV on, and it's the NFL, and I don't know what network it is. It had the quarterback, the guy. I think he was from Pittsburgh a long time ago. Whatever network that is.
Okay. Fox. You're talking Terry Bradshaw.
That's the guy right there.
Yeah.
And you've wondered why Wretched isn't a sports radio program. And they were talking about social justice. And they were talking about
all
Black
weekend.
Lives Matter. And they were just preaching it. They were preaching and preaching and preaching it. And then there was a song by Alicia Keys that went on for about 4 minutes with all kinds of video production, which, as my understanding, is what's being deemed the Black national anthem. I'm really looking for the Italian national anthem. And then maybe you're interested in the Scottish American national anthem or the German. And then you don't really have a culture. But the point is, I thought to myself, isn't it fascinating? What is football? It's a game. Therefore, their platform is a game. And they are using their platform of a game to preach morality. In the meantime, head down the street to your local evangelical church whose platform is supposed to be preaching, and all they're doing is playing games. This is not a joke. By the way, tweetable. That's tweetable right there. You can take that tweet and run with that bad boy right there. The NFL preaches when they're supposed to be playing games. The church is supposed to be preaching, and what are we doing? We're playing games. This is not a game. They are after your gospel. Need more proof?
sacred head discounted, lies crowned in locks and sweat.
And who are they singing about? Well, it was Jesus. No, it's George Floyd, I think. I can't tell.
See thorns and curls thou found in your weeping mother's hands.
Here's one thing that I do know about the lyrics, as I can't really decipher about whom is being sung. They don't quite match up to the original, do they? This is not quite the elegant poetry that was originally written in Latin, translated into German, even made its way then to a third language, English. O sacred head, now wounded with grief and shame, weighed down. Now it's being rewritten as O sacred neck, now wounded. The intent of this, apparently, to blur the distinction between... I don't even know. And that's precisely the modus operandi.
Very confusing.
Let's confuse language, confuse words, and import utter garbage into the church. While the NFL preaches while they should be playing games, we should be preaching, and we are playing games. This is Wretched Radio. And now, a message from our brothers and sisters in... China.
If I have 1 minute for American brothers and sisters, I just beg them to pray for the supply of the Bibles, and God will open the door for the Chinese people to hear the love of Christ.
The government of China tightening the screws, doing everything that they can to eradicate Christianity from their communist regime. Our brothers and sisters, they have a prayer. It is not that the persecution would stop. It is that they would receive the word of God. There are a paucity of Bibles in China, and we can change that and provide the word of God for our brothers and sisters who are being persecuted, not just in China, but around the globe. Bible League International, $5 per Bible. Will you answer their prayer? Wretched.org/Bible.
Thanks for joining us here today. You know, we always appreciate you choosing to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. We would also appreciate if you were able to find some time in your busy, busy schedules to visit the Wretched website, wretched.org. Wretched's website has some amazing content available, like full 30-minute Wretched TV episodes, full 60-minute Wretched radio episodes. Our Wretched store contains over 40 amazing resources like Jesus Unmasked, Drive-By False Teaching, and Don't Stub Your Toe. The Wretched library is where you can find a whole bunch of topics ranging from abortion to pneumatology to marriage to evangelism. You can also visit our donate page and become a gospel partner. Without the support of our listeners, there would be no Wretched. So if you're not already a gospel partner, would you please prayerfully consider becoming one? We can't do this without you. You can find out all of the information on becoming a gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
This is me biting my tongue, introducing Paul Marty from Tomorrow Clubs.
Communism so wreaked havoc in the countries where we work that they not only need physical rebuilding, but they need spiritual rebuilding as well.
Would love to offer a political commentary, but instead would like to encourage you to support your very own Tomorrow Club. In Eastern Europe, they are still feeling the ravages of communism, and very few missionary organizations seem to find their way to the poorest of the poor nations in Eastern Europe. Tomorrow Clubs does. They teach the gospel to kids every week in kids' clubs. They meet in small, poor villages where they share the gospel. The kids get saved. They bring the gospel home, and moms and dads get saved. Please consider supporting your very own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclub.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called a fragrant offering.
In the Old Testament, God required burnt offerings of meat and incense as a pleasing aroma. These sacrifices foreshadowed Jesus, the perfect offering that takes away the sins of the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
And that is precisely the problem. This is Wretched Radio. There is a modus and there is an operandi to the bad worldview known as social justice being imported into your church. Well, any second now. The challenge, of course, is using language in a precise way so that we understand what is actually being described. The word justice, it is being redefined, rewritten to mean something other than biblical justice. And then when you are told, don't you believe in justice? You have to say, well, of course I do. Great. Then please welcome our speaker from Black Lives Matter. Or here's a really rotten book about white fragility that is anti-gospel. That's the issue here. These ideas which are being imported into the church, courtesy of a Trojan horse named social justice, they aren't gospel center. And the way that they are getting away with so much is by misusing words, redefining them, making you feel bad if you don't agree with them when they actually believe that the word means something other than what you believe it means. Case in point, would like to share with you now the songwriter responsible for O Sacred Neck, Now Wounded. This is a, at least on One Gospel Coalition blog, an endorsed song from that particular writer called O Sacred Neck, Now Wounded. I think it's referring to George Floyd. The problem is, it's also about Jesus, and there's a blurring here. And I suspect that if you brought this to their attention or if they're listening to this, they'd be able to say, oh, no. This is what we're actually singing about. Even though it sounds like they're singing about that. And there's precisely the problem. Confusion over words. If you can interpret what you're about to hear, well, then you're a better man than I am. Now, if you happen to be a woman, don't be offended by that because, well, that doesn't matter in our culture these days either. This is the one responsible for O Sacred Neck, Now Wounded.
Hello, everyone. My name is Keith Watts.
That's some irony, but we'll move forward.
And I am so excited to share with you a new song by the Porter's Gate that we've worked on called O Sacred Neck, Now Wounded. Now, some of you may be familiar with the old hymn it's based off of.
Yes, we are. In fact, would like to share with you the old hymn that it's based off of. Jimmy Jam, if you'd be so kind, give me the first chorus of O Sacred Head, Now Wounded.
O Sacred Head, Now Wounded, with grief and shame weighed down, now scornfully surrounded with thorns, thine only crown. O Sacred Head, what glory, what bliss till now was thine. Yet though despised and gory, I joy to call thee mine.
Beautiful. Mike, would you like to share O Sacred Neck?
O Sacred Neck, now wounded, pressed down by blows and knees, this Son of God surrounded by silent enemies.
Wait a second. Hold on. That was about George. Okay, keep going.
Will no one stop and listen? Will no one rise and speak of violence and oppression which hanged you from the tree?
Okay, verse 2, Jimmy Jam.
What thou, my Lord, hast suffered was all for sinners' gain. Mine was the transgression, but thine the deadly pain. Lo, here I fall, my Savior, 'tis I deserve thy place. Look on me with thy favor, vouchsafe to me thy grace.
All right. Now,
Mine has thorns and kings.
Wait. We're going to make yours really special. So here's what I'm going to do. We'll play that underneath you. So here's O Sacred Neck. Go ahead, Jimmy. Mike.
O Sacred Head, discomfort, discounted, lies crowned in locks and sweat. See thorns and curls now found in your weeping mother's hands. O sun-kissed King of glory, what honor once was yours, yet now despised and gory, our still and lifeless Lord.
Okay, so it's about Jesus dying but somehow it has something to do with George Floyd. Give me the next verse, if you would, Mike.
Oh, sacred body, wounded, now breathless in the street.
Okay, see, right? Which one is it here?
Your people here press onward to be your hands and feet, your mouth to speak your justice, your heartbeat for the poor, your life it flows within us to break down prison doors.
Okay. See, I
absolutely beautiful.
That's as clear as this.
Him not only plunges us into the spiritual depths that Jesus himself went through, but we also see the tangible, bodily, and earthly suffering of our incarnate in the flesh God in his process to redeem and restore us.
Okay. So that's about Jesus.
I can follow
that.
So
with O Sacred Neck, we ask with the Psalms, who is he, this King of Glory? What does it mean that our God became human? And is that good news to us? Who is he, this King of Glory? How might we worship differently, remembering that Jesus was brown or that he had curly hair?
Okay, whoa, wait, whoa. What left-hand turn did we just take right here? Hold on.
Or maybe even a curly beard. Who is he, this King of Glory? How does our worldview change when we remember the inconceivable God was born, drank milk from his mama's breast, and that his own mother mourned her son's death? Who is he, this King of Glory?
The Lord, strong and mighty. The Lord, mighty in battle. He is the King of Glory. Lift up your heads, O you gates. It's about Jesus. The question has already been answered. This song is intended to do nothing but confuse.
How does his unjust death inform our sense of faithful lament and our action toward justice? Will we receive him, this King of Glory, Jesus Christ, the image of the invisible God? And will seeing him afresh with new and transformed eyes allow us to see the image of God in our neighbor? We invite you into the questioning, the worship.
Okay, the questioning is replete because I it's a lot of religious language. I'm not exactly sure what his point is. And then when you go about the business of rewriting O Sacred Head, How Wounded, Now Wounded, which is clearly about Jesus Christ, but then you change some of the lyrics to make it sound like George Floyd. What is going on?
Well, they throw the second verse in there to make it seem like it's a Christian worship song.
Yeah.
A little bit of Jesus.
A little bit of George.
A little bit of George.
Okay. Is there any more to this?
Oh, there's two more.
Rewritten?
The
rewritten version.
I would rather not read the rewritten.
Well, you have the chorus, or the refrain, I'm sorry. O man of sorrows beaten down, our brother's blood cries from the ground. You bore our sin, we turned our eyes from you, the Lamb of God.
Okay, so wow. I think the idea is, I'm trying, I really am. So George is like Jesus in that he suffered too.
Is this not what we do with many of our worship songs today? We try to place man at the same equal level as Christ in our worship music today. And that's what I think is being done here for George Floyd. This is a worship song, it's just a worship of George Floyd.
I can't, you know what? I'll be gracious. I can't tell. I mean, I can't tell. Oh, Sacred Neck, Now Wounded? Wait, everybody knows the current contemporary reference. So what is the point of this? If you want to sing about what you believe are injustices, please, then Mr. Watts, write a song about it. Go ahead. That's fine. But taking one that is about the death of our Lord Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins, well, this is just unconscionable. Now, just to cleanse our palate, this won't be a sorbet for you to swish around in your mouth. Instead, Jimmy Jam, would you be so kind to read the next two verses of O Sacred Head, Now Wounded?
Absolutely, I would love to. What language shall I borrow to thank thee, dearest friend, for this thy dying sorrow, thy pity without end? Oh, make me thine forever, and should I fainting be, Lord, let me never, never outlive my love to thee. Be thou my consolation, my shield when I must die. Remind me of thy passion when my last hour draws nigh. Mine eyes shall then behold thee, upon thy cross shall dwell. My heart by faith enfolds thee, who dieth thus dies well.
And now we are conflating it with George Floyd. Hmm. This is an example of obfuscation, of a lack of clarity, of using words in different contexts with different meanings. And I guarantee you, just like it was seeping into corporations and into government sects, where they are supposed to be focusing on military or research, the president had to sign a document stating, you're not going to teach this in a government entity, because they were. And yet, even though Donald Trump could see fit to put a kibosh to this inside of government agencies, we're allowing it into the church. Be on guard. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Hicks. Well, Grace Community Church on Sunday defied a judge's order not to meet indoors during the pandemic, with Pastor John MacArthur telling attendees that the state's restrictions for legal outdoor services would make it impossible to follow and result in the congregation shutting down. The church met indoors yesterday, 3 days after California State Judge Mitchell Beckloff issued an injunction against such services and upheld Los Angeles County's health restrictions on large gatherings. Beckloff said the county's order allows worship to occur outdoors, although MacArthur, during Sunday's 10:30 a.m. service, said the various restrictions on outdoor worship are impractical. The California Department of Health released a 14-page document on July 29th outlining requirements and recommendations for churches to legally meet. Los Angeles County issued its own requirements and recommendations in July that churches in the county must follow. The church, which has several thousand members and attendees, would be limited to 350 to 400 people in a tent if it followed all of the restrictions. MacArthur told attendees that these requirements would completely shut the church down. Furthermore, Pastor MacArthur said, quote, obviously this is not constitutional, but more importantly, it goes against the will of the Lord of the church. He calls us to gather. That he does. Several big-name liberal publications have decided to go on the defense for a Netflix movie that hypersexualizes little girls. You've got outlets like Rolling Stone, The Los Angeles Times, The Telegraph, and The New Yorker who are defending the film as worth seeing and condemned critics as crazy from the right wing who are afraid of child sexuality. My friends, two words that should never be used together, child and sexuality. In August, news broke that a Netflix movie from France called Cuties, featuring sexualized young girls, would debut on the platform in the fall. Of course, controversy ensued when uncomfortable folks appalled at seeing the film's promo material featuring preteens in skimpy outfits got a hold of an early review from Screen Daily of the French film, which claimed it contained scenes of, quote, twerking preteen bodies. Of course, the review attempted to justify those scenes as teaching a moral lesson. It claimed the scenes were explicitly designed to shock mature audiences into a contemplation of today's destruction of innocence. Most people, especially normal people who love their children, were appalled that the movie would even feature hypersexualized twerking girls to prove a point about hypersexualized twerking girls. See, it doesn't make sense. What was weirder was the review even went so far as to call Cuties a film for and about kids. The Los Angeles Times called Cuties a film worth seeing. The New Yorker defended the film as well. And the most depraved film review in the history of mankind possibly was written by the British paper The Telegraph, which called Cuties a provocative power keg for an age terrified by child sexuality. Sorry we haven't caught up with that kind of progress. What in the world has happened to our culture? Sad times we're living in, folks. More Wretched Radio still to come. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
The fruit of the Spirit is evidence that God is working in us. Every believer will evidence this fruit. But it is important to remember that bearing fruit is a consequence of salvation, not a requirement for salvation. God is working in us and through us, and He is the source of this fruit, not us. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hi, this is Phyllis Diller. You're listening to Todd Friel, the only man in the world who wears makeup on radio.
Not the only one.
Well,
this is Wretched Radio. Not only that, but I happen to be the most tweetable radio host on this station at this time. Not one, but two tweetable tweets. The NFL, they're supposed to be playing games, and they're preaching. The church is supposed to be preaching, and we're playing games. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're trending right now on Twitter.
All by myself. Tweet number two. Donald Trump bans critical race theory. The church embraces it. Huh?
Oh.
There's another good one for you. Don't know if you have heard, but the president had to sign whatever it is that presidents are signing these days because, well, honestly, it doesn't seem like a lot of legislation. It seems like an awful lot of mandates, which frankly scares me a lot. I see a lot of celebrated legislation. No, it's not legislation. It is the executive order business where the president, for instance, he just signed a document that states that religious organizations on university and high school campuses, they need to be protected. That's funny. I thought our Constitution did that. Nevertheless, in order for them to participate in the life of a campus, they need a document signed by the president. My concern is the next president someday will unsign that. Just put a big old red line through it and then sign another piece of legislation. And Christian organizations on campuses will not be permitted. Nevertheless, the president ending critical race theory training for federal employees, calling it a sickness. And yet, this sickness is actually adopted. Adopted by the Southern Baptist Convention as Resolution 9. Now, please, this is not a political statement. We must get the irony. The president of the United States stating critical race theory is so bad, the millions of dollars that are being spent to promote it inside of corporation, he can't control corporations, inside of federal agencies, we're going to stop that. Signature. In the meantime, it's actually affirmed as a helpful analytical tool by the largest Protestant denomination in the country. Somebody's got it wrong here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You be the judge. The Trump administration is halting critical race theory training in federal agencies, calling it anti-American propaganda. It's bad enough it's anti-American. It's anti-Christian. It's anti-Christ in its nature. And that is why we must defend it. If you think, oh, not another tirade on this subject again, I'm going to paraphrase Martin Luther. I'll translate it from German for you. Basically, he said, if we are not at the point of contention in our culture, in our world, in the church, really, fighting over theological issues, then you might as well just get out of the game. You can preach all of the great doctrines that you want to, but if you are not hitting it right in the bullseye of the big issue of the day, then you're biffing it. That's a loose translation. This is the big issue of the day for the church. The president seems to recognize that. This is a sickness that cannot be allowed to continue. Please report any sighting so we can quickly extinguish it. That's what we should be doing in the church. Reporting it. Where are you seeing it? And you probably are seeing it in your church, aren't you? I'm seeing all the time, especially from neo-reformed circles, that the embracing of bad ideologies and bad people. Why? Because it looks good, sort of, because they use words that almost make it impossible for you to say, that's a bad thing, because they change the meaning of words. Do you know that the word racist doesn't mean what you think it means? Racist doesn't mean I have a haughty attitude that I am going to apply to my relationship with this person and perhaps treat them poorly or just hold a bad attitude. That's all that racism used to be. I just thought I was superior to you because I'm this color and you're that color. That's not what it means today. Racism means that there is a group of people who are the oppressors and there's a group of people who are the oppressed. And the group of oppressors, all they do is implement systems, hence systemic racism, to keep the oppressed group oppressed. Does that sound the same to you? No, because it's different. And so somebody in your church says, hey, we're going to get together to talk about this racism thing. And you're going to go, cool. But they don't mean what you think they mean by it. And by the way, if I could talk about social justice, I can't help but wonder, where are the cries? Where are the new songs being rewritten for other social justice issues? Sex trafficking? Oh, what is that that other one? It's pretty big.
Abortion?
That's the word right there. What about abortion? The fact. How's about this little connected fact that over half of the babies in New York City, in New York, are aborted rather than born?
Oh, I didn't know that.
What about justice for those black lives? It's non-existent, and you can't figure out why. And the answer to it is because they don't mean what you think it means. They want an overthrowing of the systems because this has far more to do with Marxism than it does with race. The Christian church, we lead on racial issues. We are the ones with a solution. If you're a Christian and you are not at the very least warring against any racial feelings and emotions that you have in your body, you should question the state of your salvation. And I would say that about any subject. If you're not warring against any sin, you need to be taking a close look and going, how do I feel about my Savior and how do I feel about sin? It is a danger if somebody harbors ongoing murderous thoughts, which is what racism is. And I am not aware of any Christian who at the very least wouldn't say racism is horrible, if we define the word rightly.
Right.
Harboring superior thoughts, that is a sinful thought akin to murder. And even if they struggle with those thoughts for whatever reason, they're struggling. So every Christian feels that racism, as we understand it, is a wicked sin. We get that. That's not what they mean. They mean something totally different. And that is what critical race theory does. Russ Vaught, director of the Office of Management and Budget, wrote a memo informing agencies of Trump's instruction to stop using controversial forms of training on critical race theory, white privilege, and any other training or propaganda effort that teaches or suggests that either the United States is an inherently racist or evil country, or that any race or ethnicity is inherently racist or evil.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
get rid of it.
The Office of Management and Budget, in an effort to defend the country, recognizes this is bad. Church is embracing it. These types of trainings not only run counter to the fundamental beliefs for which our nation has stood since its inception, but they also engender division and resentment within the federal workforce. There's the agenda. Divide, 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 divide. That is what this does, and that is what it is doing even as I speak. This is a divider, this issue. Now, that raises some interesting questions. How are we going to treat one another on this subject matter? And on its face, well, once you dig below the surface to understand the meaning inside of that Trojan horse word of social justice or critical race theory or racism or intersectionality, once you get there, is it on its face heretical? And the answer is no, it's not. Can it become that? Yes. Yes, it can. And that is why we should indeed be having conversations about these issues. But the conversations, I think, need to start with focusing on what does that word mean? What are we talking about? What are we describing here? Because as soon as it is revealed what is really going on, then we should actually act faster than the Office of Budget and Management and the President of the United States in saying that has no place here. And now we can get to work on real racial reconciliation, which is a beautiful thing. If you weren't aware of how pervasive this is, the Treasury Department, they were doing training on teaching this racial division concept called critical theory. The National Credit Union Administration, ditto. Sandia National Laboratories, supposed to be doing research, they're being taught critical race theory. Argonne National Laboratories. Department of Homeland Security, that's nice to know, and the FBI. Those agencies were being infiltrated, and our president had to come along and say it has no place. Pastor, might I suggest, if we're going to be analogous in any way, you're the president of your congregation. Sorry to my Baptistic friends who believe in congregational models. Nevertheless, senior pastor, you have got a threat. It is at your door. I know there's a gazillion of them. I know that you've got several people in your church. After every sermon, they just find you like a laser and go, hey, pastor, did you hear about the... This is big. This has risen to the top. This is the issue of our day. And if we are going to be genuine Christians, we're going to be genuine defenders of truth. Because while on its face, critical theory does not necessarily compromise the gospel, if it continues to fester, it most certainly will. So I join my social justice warrior friends in stating, you're right. This is a gospel issue. Just not in the way you think it is. This is Wretched Radio.
Suicide, typically an uncomfortable topic to talk about, but it's one we need to talk more about because it's the third leading cause of death among Gen Zers. This generation has the highest reported levels of clinical anxiety and depression than any other generation at the same age. Today's youth need help, and that's why Wretched has come out with our newest booklet, 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide and 13 Reasons Why You Should Live. Find your copies right now at wretched.org/13. This booklet targets the heart of anyone struggling with the issues of depression, anxiety, and suicide. You may not realize it, but you know someone who's dealing with these issues right now. And 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide will provide them with the biblical answers for the struggles that they're facing. Find your copies right now at wretched.org/13. Give these booklets away to someone who need hope. wretched.org/13. That's wretched.org/13.
What does $28 buy these days? Well, for starters, it buys an ultrasound. More importantly, it buys a life.
My pregnancy was unplanned. Abortion was in the back of my mind, but seeing my baby girl moving and hearing the heartbeat, it was so overwhelming. We can't wait to welcome our baby girl into this world.
That is one grateful mommy, and I'm certain it will be one grateful baby who was given life because you provided a free ultrasound through preborn.org/wretched. $28 will provide an ultrasound 80% of the time. A mommy who is choosing the termination of her own child will choose life. Will you please consider supporting this very efficient and life-saving ministry that preaches the gospel? Preborn.org/wretched.
We're hip. We're neat. You can text us from your seats. And upon actually hearing that said out loud, I want to apologize. But hey, I do have some very, very exciting news. See, Wretched is now operating in the 21st century with Text to Give. As you know, gospel partners are extremely important and essential and vital to us here at Wretched. Without them, there is no us. And right now, you can text the word Wretched to the number 44321 and become a gospel partner. However, if that's not your style, you can still visit wretched.org/donate and give there. Every dollar you give is carefully stewarded away. If you're already a gospel partner, we can't even begin to tell you how grateful we are to you. And if you're not a gospel partner already, would you prayerfully consider becoming one? To do that, it's real simple and easy. Just visit wretched.org/donate, or again, text the word wretched to the number 44321. wretched.org/donate, or text wretched to 44321.
Books of the Bible. Deuteronomy means second law. As the Israelites prepared to enter the promised land after wandering 40 years, God reminds them of how he rescued them from Egypt, what he commands in his law, and the blessings and curses that come with keeping or breaking his law. God is faithful to provide the inheritance he has promised to his children. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Totes on your side, Pastor. This is Wretched Radio. Huh? How hip am I? Totes. On
That's
your side,
cool.
Pastor. That means completely what that means right there.
That reference is kind of old.
We love pastors. Is it? Yikes.
Yeah.
What is it then?
I don't know.
Okay, wait a second.
That's not on track with Cap G in those.
It's not. Look, it's not easy to be current.
No, it's not.
Which a youth pastor has better things to do anyway. Pastor, we're totally on your side. We love pastors. We think that pastors should be prayed for way more than they currently are. This is not an effort at all to criticize pastors. Just the opposite. This is a wrestling with an issue that I know you are thinking through. And this is not intended to say, do it like this. Because I get the complexity of the struggle that you are currently experiencing. But perhaps somewhere in this little wrestling match of trying to figure out how a pastor should deal with these issues that are slamming him today, maybe just maybe you'll hear something inside of them. But I hope you will not hear, well, this is what they think that I should be doing. Who do they think they are? We're fully aware of who we are. We are not pastoring your church. You are. And you are the man. And I don't mean that in a David and Nathan kind of way. I mean this in a good way. You're the man. We're not. This is a help. I hope. Right now, pastors are struggling. It seems to me, if any of the articles and polling that I see through different organizations, pastors are struggling mightily with complex issues that are making their way into the church. You have two big ones right now and all of their complexities. One is the COVID business. The other one is racial issues, social justice issues. We'll leave the COVID one out for the moment because we've been focusing on the critical race theory. How is the pastor to lead his congregation? This is tricky indeed. Why? Because we've got a weaker brother issue going on. There are people inside of the church, they're new in the faith. Perhaps they've never been confronted with biblical ideologies compared to worldly ones. Perhaps because you have got a mixed congregation with different skin colors, you recognize the sensitivity of this issue. You recognize the pain behind this issue. And so you don't want to speak too strongly. And yet, I would suggest to you that gets challenged by the New Testament itself, which says, speak strongly, rebuke, don't let false teaching in. Uh-oh, now do you get a sense of where your pastor is at today? And why it is that he's going, how am I going to preach this text? How am I going to preach this sermon? How am I going to deliver this message? How am I going to respond to these emails? He's up against it. Why? Because he's a shepherd and he loves you and he loves all of the people. He loves the weaker brother. He loves the stronger brother. This happens to be taken from the one. This is Nicholas Batzig, the one for whom Christ died. In the context of the fellowship of believers, the Apostle Paul insisted on dealing with those who may not have the same informed conscience in both a wise and loving manner. This is Romans 14. This is 1 Corinthians 8 through 10. Dealing with somebody who thinks it's a sin. And we're focusing from this particular text more on how we treat somebody whose conscience isn't as informed. Please note, with adiaphron, these are the disputable dispensations, the areas that appear to be gray, but really aren't. This isn't, adiaphron is not postmodernism. It doesn't mean that both sides are right on the issue of meat sacrificed to idols. Paul weighs in Romans 14 and says, it's not a sin because idols don't exist. There's demons behind them. But there is only one God. It is Jesus Christ. That meat was not really sacrificed to an idol. So buy it and eat it. It's fine. So this was not a way of saying, like Michel Foucault, both of you, all right. That's not what he is saying. He's saying one of you is right. The other is wrong. Now, how do you treat one another? How do you talk to one another? Addressing the belligerent way in which believers with strong consciences may assert their opinion in such a way that they harm those who with weaker consciences on a matter. Paul said, do not destroy the one for whom Christ died. So your pastor looks out over the congregation on Sunday and he sees people for whom Christ died. Some of them more mature, some of them less mature. Some black, some white, Hispanic, Korean, whatever. Male, female, different socioeconomic statuses. Not only that, he knows what's going on in a lot of people's messes. He knows a lot of the heartbreak that's going on. He knows about the prodigal children. And he's thinking about all of that when he's preparing a message. All of that is coming to bear on his heart while he puts down what he wants to say from the pulpit, from God's mouth to your ears through a preacher. That is what he is dealing with. And Paul says, don't destroy the one for whom Christ died. The gospel comes to bear on the most mundane of matters in the life of the church. Paul doesn't simply say, Christ has died for you, so you're free to eat and drink. But in turning to those who understood their liberty of conscience, Paul says, remember, the weaker brother with whom you disagree was purchased with the same blood of Christ that you were purchased with. Paul doesn't tell the stronger brethren to adopt the conscience-binding practices of the weaker brethren. So you don't want to bring it in. You don't want to say, well, then we better allow some white fragility, some social justice, a little critical race theory. No, don't do that. But he tells them their spiritual consideration of the identity of the ones with whom they disagree on matters of conscience ought to come to bear. That is what your pastor wrestles with. It's probably not the issue. I doubt your pastor's struggling with the issue unless he has really been bamboozled by the social justice business, that he wasn't critical enough to say, well, are we sure that those good brothers, and there are some good brothers who are promoting this stuff, y'all, that's a fact. There are some good brothers who I believe are just confused on the issue. They've been reputable in the past. I've benefited from them before. Well, maybe I need to bring some of it in, say some. And that is happening. But I think a lot of them, they know that this is bad business. It's unbiblical. And it's distracting from what really brings black and white, purple and orange together, which is Jesus Christ, so that he is all in all. But he doesn't know how to present it. Or he's struggling with it. That's the issue. Why? Because he's thinking about the weaker conscience. He doesn't want to lose people. Now, could it be for wrong reasons like church growth? Yes, we're going to give the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't want to lose a sheep because he doesn't want them going astray and wandering out in the wilderness by themselves where they can be devoured or become obnoxious. So how is the pastor to address this? How does he come down without coming down and bruising people? And I've got to tell you, I think it's a struggle. So ask yourself the question. Just imagine yourself. You're going to mount the pulpit this Sunday. And this is the announcement afterward before. And you're going to talk about critical race theory. Look out over those faces, knowing what your pastor knows. Go. How are you going to talk about it? Hey, there's this stupid thing called critical race theory. Not going to make its way into this church. So you social justice warriors, boo-hoo for you. Okay, that's one way. You can go all squish bomb on the other side. You know, there's maybe some good things here. We'll try to figure out some of the good things here. And well, you know, because, you know, we're about justice too. And so let me just say, you know, love black and white, really do, because I just got to tell you. So, don't you worry, because we're on this. Where would you land? How does the pastor do this? And in this instance, pastor, this is just a nugget for you to chew on. Just think of your plate of options. This is the parsley on the side. You can chew on this or spit it out. It seems to me at this point in the conversation, This is my two cents on it, and I'm not trying to say this is what every pastor in every context should do. I think you need to start leaning more toward the, we've got to be firm on this issue. This is going too far. It's become increasingly clear what the real agenda is here, and we're not going to abide by it. But in case you're thinking, oh no, we're not interested in racial reconciliation, we most certainly are. And so here's what we're going to do in this congregation. We're going to study it biblically. So for the next 8 weeks, we're going to have a Sunday school that actually talks about these issues biblically, rejecting the worldly. Is there anybody here who wants worldly ideas? No, of course you don't. Neither do I, neither does God, and this church will not tolerate it. Therefore, we're going to make sure that we fill our brains with biblical notions of justice and racial reconciliation, but we are not going to entertain godless ideas. We hope you'll join us. I think it needs it. issues happen at different times. They become gestated. They grow and they change in their complexity, and they form and they shape. And I think we're at the point now where I think we all get what's going on here. And Pastor, and in loving encouragement, maybe, just maybe, now is the time to speak a little bit more like Jude, to contend for the faith and not be soft and squishy. And until tomorrow, go serve your King.